Cuban President Fidel Castro has outlasted 9 U.S. presidents, but he is 78 years old, and officials in Havana and in Washington have begun planning for the post-Castro era. Critics suspect Castro ordered the roundup of 75 dissidents last year in order to weaken any opposition to the Cuban regime in advance of a transition to new leadership. The Bush administration, meanwhile, has its own blueprint for post-Castro Cuba and intends to pursue it if the president is reelected. NPR's Tom Gelton was in Cuba recently and has this report.
Change brings conflict, and with Cuba preparing for life without Fidel Castro, stormy times are coming. Last March, Miriam Leiva's husband, Oscar Espinosa, was arrested along with 74 other dissidents and independent journalists. Speaking in her Havana apartment, she suggests the crackdown was ordered because she and her husband and other dissidents were successfully promoting what was called the Varela Project, under which Cubans were calling for a constitutional referendum over what kind of government Cuba should have.
It was the first time the opposition had gone to the streets to talk with the people and explain what a project was about, and people were losing fear and were signing the Varela Project. I think that the government knew that if people lost fear, many things could happen in Cuba.
Some professional Cuba watchers, including Jorge Dominguez of Harvard University, actually saw the arrest of the dissidents last year as a logical response by the Cuban government to the political challenge it was facing.
As much as one may condemn the crackdown on the dissidents, it's important analytically to bear in mind that that crackdown served a political purpose. As it prepares for the transition from Fidel to somebody else, they do want to limit the strength and the number of those who are organized to challenge them.
Seen from Havana's perspective, the arrest of the dissidents was justified by the fact that the United States had been financing the dissident cause. Ricardo Alarcón, president of the Cuban National Assembly, cites Attorney General John Ashcroft and the rest of the Bush administration moving against Arab Americans suspected of aiding terrorist groups.
Ask Mr. Ashcroft, how would they feel if the Castro regime were to finance and to organize people trying to change the American society? They would be in jail. They will be accused, they will be presented to a court of law, and so that's what we did here.
In fact, last year's dissident crackdown may be a foreshadowing of what's to come in Cuba as the end of Fidel Castro's rule draws nearer. This past summer, the Bush administration weighed in with its own contribution. The President's Commission for Assistance to a Free Cuba outlined steps to hasten the end of the Cuban dictatorship and assist Cuba's transition to democracy and a free market economy. Some of the recommendations have already been implemented, such as a further restriction of travel to Cuba and new limitations on cash remittances, all to increase the financial pressure on the Castro regime. And the commission specified what a post-Castro government would have to do to earn U.S. assistance. Privatize state-owned enterprises, for example, revamp the military, and consider the claims of people whose homes or factories were seized by the Cuban Revolution. Back in Washington, Assistant Secretary of State Roger Noriega, the Transition Commission coordinator, says this last task won't be easy.
The Cuban government in transition, a democratic government, will want to tackle this issue in a way that doesn't displace, you know, thousands of Cubans and cause social unrest. But there has to be some recognition, moral and economic, that people who lost their property because of illegal acts by the Cuban state should be remunerated for that property.
The commission suggested ways the United States could intervene to assist a new government by helping Cubans to rewrite their constitution, even by assisting with policing in the crucial days that would follow a collapse of the Castro regime. The report says the United States would get involved only if a new Cuban government were to request it. Roger Noriega says he thinks most Cubans will be ready for big changes.
I doubt very seriously that a majority of people will want to cling to this kind of repressive economic and political arrangement. We will not accompany that sort of arrangement. We will not support any effort by the cadre there to preserve Castroism after Castro.
The current Cuban authorities, who for decades have defied the U.S. government at nearly every opportunity, are agitated by the detailed U.S. blueprint for a new Cuban state. In Havana, Ricardo Alarcón charges a U.S. government could not guarantee the implementation of its post-Castro plan without effectively taking the country over.
It's exactly the idea of annexing Cuba or occupying Cuba and getting Cuba as a, not even a colony, as a piece of land administered by the U.S. and so, not even in Iraq. The whole logic of Iraq, the whole idea is to get out, organizing another government and getting out. In Cuba, the whole strategy is getting in forever.
The State Department's Roger Noriega insists the detailed definition of what a post-Castro Cuba ought to look like is only a suggestion based on recognized international standards. In the end, he says, Cubans should be able to choose the political and economic system they want.
It's all predicated on the belief that Cuba should be Cuban. The decisions by Cubans about Cuba's future should be made by the Cuban people themselves. And that includes many who are in exile.
Whether Cubans can agree on the future shape of their country is another question. Dissident Miriam Leiva, for one, says the measures taken so far by the U.S. government to promote a transition in Cuba, in her opinion, are wrong.
In the first place, because they didn't ask the dissidents in Cuba what we thought. These measures have been drafted in the United States by people who don't live here, who don't have any contact with our reality, and thus they don't know what is most important or what we need.
In fact, the dissidents disagree among themselves. Cuban exiles now living in Miami have a different perspective from Cubans who stayed on the island. And Cuba analyst Jorge Dominguez says no one, not the Bush administration, not the exiles, not the dissidents, and not the current authorities in Havana, really have any idea what will happen when Castro departs from the scene.
Fidel is such a giant that when he passes, the word vacuum does not do justice to the enormous change. And that is the single most important difficulty of imagining post-Fidel Cuba. He has filled the history of that country to such an extent that it's very hard to imagine Cuba without him.
It may be that energy is being wasted on all these preparations, at least in the short term. Fidel Castro has longevity in his family, and his doctor said this summer that Castro was so healthy he could live to be 140. Tom Gelton, NPR News.